hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with the scallywag himself, Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
Scallywag. I you know what? That's one of my favorite British words, actually.
Is it?
I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like a pirate, you know?
Arr. Yeah, I guess it could be. It's not just exclusively for pirates, though. I'll be honest. Anyone can use it. It is perfectly allowed to use in polite society.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. What you've just established is that not all scallywags are pirates, but are all pirates scallywags?
No, I wouldn't say they are either. No, I don't think that's the case at all.
Okay.
In my experience, the pirates I've met, some of them are not scallywags. So.
It's good to know. That's very good to know.
Yeah. Well, Adam, we haven't recorded in a while, so it might be a little rusty today, might not, but I'm very excited about the topic. I think we might potentially annoy some people today with this topic, or at least challenge them to the point where they're a little frustrated or maybe even concerned. But the person that brought this subject to us, welcome to the show for the first time. I know you're a Desti, but it's Dan Flores. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're very welcome. Now, you were saying before the show started that you hate the jingle, right? Isn't that what you were saying?
I was saying I dig it. I listened to an episode where someone brought their own, a mutual friend of ours, and I was going to bring my own. I went, you know what? It's already pretty good.
Yeah, and Stuart.
Jeanette stole that shtick already.
She did. Yeah, I was like, there's no reason.
Yeah. Stuart, objection leading the witness also. I just want to throw that out there.
Overruled. Yeah. All right. Do you want to get into it, Adam? You want to
Let's
do it?
Let's do it.
I haven't heard this jingle in like 3 weeks. It's amazing. Are you playing it yet? There you go.
Dan does like it. I can see it.
Is he bouncing?
It's catchy. Yeah.
Always.
I think
we need to get back to playing the whole thing. I just don't think we're doing it justice.
Okay, if you can get 100 likes on, I'm not even going to do that shtick anymore. We've done it a million times. No, veto. I get to edit, so even if you played the whole thing, I'd just cut it out. So
yeah, you know what? Okay, I'd love to increase your workload, actually. <That's so great.
laughs> I would not appreciate that, I'll be honest. So, all right. So today's Stu's News, I actually like this one because we've been so AI focused for a while. This is getting back to the core of travel and travel marketing. And, I think unless you're hiding under a rock, everyone's seen this, but the content that's being created from primarily Europeans, but really people from around the world that are coming to the US for the first time for the World Cup and getting to experience America in all its glory, right, is one of my favorite hobbies right now. Like I can spend hours just watching people just blown away by the crazy thing that is America, right? And I'll be honest, if you haven't seen this is basically people coming and saying, going to a Waffle House for the first time and saying it's the best breakfast they've ever had, or they go into a Walmart and just can't believe how much stuff, or Costco. Yeah, that's a great one. They can't believe the size of the portions, right? The size of the drinks that people are comparing large fries at McDonald's or whatever. And I think, there's some folks criticizing saying, this is the bad side of America. It's the excess. It's the, it's the overindulgent, right? But to me, I'm going to take you back in a journey through time to when I was probably around 10 years old. And I was already a consumer of American media, TV, stuff like that, right? But in movies especially. But it was this magical, fantastic land that I didn't have access to when I was 10. But I remember a family friend of ours that we were having lunch with just came back from America, and they were talking about how they went to this ice cream place where you could get as much ice cream as you wanted, and they'd scoop it on, and then you had these chocolate syrups that you could pour on, and they would like solidify, and they could eat that and pour more on. And they were describing this world that would just seem so fantastical, so magical, so like just outside of the norm. And it was something that I remember to this day, that conversation, and it made me sort of aspire to want to go to America. That's not why I moved here. I moved here because my wife's from here, but it made America aspirational to me, and it made it a place that I wanted to visit, right? And was fascinated with because it was so different than what I was used to. And I think that we're seeing a little bit of that here, right? I think we sometimes take for granted what we have here. I mean, it is the nation of excess and abundance and generosity and warmth and friendliness, and like it's so magical to a lot of people, and it's so, and deliberately using the word, it's so foreign to a lot of people that this to me is a good reminder of why people travel, what they want on a vacation, what assets we have that we're really not leaning into. And I would challenge, I'm challenging my team, but I would challenge everyone listening, like really start looking at your destination at, through the lens of a first-time visitor again. And what are those magical moments that are going to stand out to them? Because sometimes it's the most mundane thing to us because we're so blind to it because we've been used to it for so long that really stands out. So I don't know, Adam, I'm sure you've seen this. I'd love to get your opinion on what you're seeing and how DMOs could leverage this kind of content.
I mean, I can't stop watching those videos because I think they are so fun. And you mentioned Europeans. I think the Japanese are maybe having the best time of anyone that's coming to the United States right now. And watching those videos, it kind of reminds me of the fact that no matter who you are, your experience is only relative to what you know, right? And so the term, as I get older, the term "I don't know what I don't know" c continues to ring more and more true. And it's funny because you go through this phase as kind of a adolescent and even early 20s of desiring to show everyone that you know everything. And then as you get older, you start to recognize how much you just don't know. And I think as Americans in general, I think that we are, in a positive way, ignorant to what the rest of the world is like. And I was fortunate to have spent 2 years in Brazil and seen, I walked through favelas and spent a lot of time in extreme poverty in Brazil. And so I've seen what other pockets of the world are and can be like. And I'm not saying that there's not pockets of poverty and challenge in the United States. Of course there is. But we've got it pretty good here. And I think these videos of foreigners experiencing the United States for the first time is a great reminder that we've got it pretty good here in the United States and that it's an incredible place to visit. And Buc-ee's for us is a stop to get gas, right? But for somebody experiencing it for the first time, it's an amusement park of snacks and food and brisket. And so it's such a good point, Stuart, what you ended your reaction with as a destination. Sometimes we have the luxury of not remembering what it's like to experience our destination for the first time. And if we truly remove all of the experiences that we have and try to look at our destination for the first time, we may find that there's a lot of stuff that we take for granted in our destination that a visitor visiting for the first time would be amazed about. And one quick example that I'll give and then I'll wrap up is I bet New Yorkers are so sick of the pigeons that are all over New York. But people that haven't experienced pigeons and all the crazy things pigeons do in New York might think it's the most fascinating thing in the world to watch those pigeons for 2 hours in New York, right? And I'm trying to think of a ridiculous example, something that's totally annoying to New Yorkers, but I think there's pigeons in every destination that if we actually take a minute and look at it, we're going to find things that visitors really, really value that we're completely overlooking.
Dan, I'm sure you've seen some of this content too. You have a take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obsessed with it. I live in the Northeast, and the Tartan Army took over the Providence, Boston area. And one of the things that it did for me was really, I think, from an international lens, I spent 20 years doing international inbound tourism, and we want you here. We are friendly. We do care about your cultures and the things that you guys care about. And it to me, the videos of the Algerian team in some small town, and I think it's Missouri, that all the locals were wearing the jerseys here, where, I mean, the Tartan Army took over Providence.
Okay,
I've
let's
seen
just
more
pretend,
locals wearing kilts than I ever have.
Dan, let's just pretend in theory that I don't know what the Tartan Army is. Would you mind sharing that?
I'm so ignorant, Adam.
It's the Scotland fans for their football team.
Nice.
And I mean, it's been, my family, we were out and about. We bought a No Scotland, No Party shirt the other day. It just reminds us that international tourism, other cultures are fantastic to have here, and we want them.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things about this is, and I've talked to some of my friends that have come over for the World Cup and gone to some of the England games. I've talked to, I've seen the media coverage, talked to a lot of folks about this, but you know, there's this sort of stigma about America in the international space right now, and a lot of that's political. Some of it's the violence. So, you know, there's rhetoric that's because their only exposure is being a filtered. Is being filtered through media, which often is agendered, often, you know, is not necessarily focused on positive things. But I gotta tell you, I was flat out wrong about this World Cup. I thought we were gonna see half empty stadiums because the pricing. I thought we were gonna see a lot of folks not coming. I thought it was not gonna be that impactful. But this may be the single biggest tourism boost for America, not because folks are coming for the World Cup, but because I think it's a reset and it's an opportunity for America to say, hey, we're not what you see in the media. Here's what
Yeah.
we are, and do that through the lens of the visitors. So it's been really, really fun to watch. But I think more importantly, if I was someone like Brand USA, I would be all in. This would be the
Yeah.
centerpiece of my campaign for the next 3 or 4 years minimum. For every destination, I think it's an opportunity to learn. Like, how do we tell the story of our destination through the lens of these visitors? You know, the spectacular, the wonderful, the just amazing things that we have to offer. Because every destination has those, right? And they can be really, really simple. Like, it's one of the ones that I've seen probably a dozen times is someone at a pancake house saying, is this one pancake? And it's like this stack of pancakes. And they're like, yeah, that's one order of pancakes. So everyone has that kind of stuff in there, you know, and it doesn't always have to be excess, right? It can be novelty. It could just be hospitality, how welcoming we are, you know? And so I think we got to get back to reminding ourselves why people travel and what the value to everyone is when people travel. Because you're exactly right, Dan. It's not just about they come here and have a great time and go back and be ambassadors. It's also that we are enriched getting to host
Yeah.
people in our own backyard, you know? And so I think in a world where it's so divided and everyone's so against everything for no reason, this is a travel is the great equalizer, right? It brings people together, it heals wounds, it resets expectations and narratives. And so every DMO should be a little different tomorrow than they were yesterday as a result of what we've seen, this organic phenomenon that's happened. It's amazing. It
Yeah.
gives me renewed hope for DMOs, for humanity in general. It's
Well,
awesome.
and Stuart, you mentioned that you thought that the stadiums were going to be half full. I think this is a good opportunity for me to take a victory lap, which I wouldn't normally do, right? Of my prediction. So what I'm going to do is I'm
Hold
going to
on, let me make a
pause.
note of this so I can edit this part
Yeah,
out.
I'm going to pause right now so that you can insert the clip of me saying that World Cup is going to be a massive success. So I'll pause right here.
I'm not going to do that, and nor am I going to go back and listen to whether that's true or not. That could be completely a retcon.
I had to try and see if I could get you to do it.
Did you really say that? I forget what I
It
said
was in our
yesterday,
Eddie
let alone what you
Kirsch,
said 4 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago.
episode. I think you and Eddie were both kind of getting a little pessimistic on the World Cup, and my prediction was that I believe that it was still going to be a pretty solid success, and it was based on the rate of ticket sales and things like that that we had seen. And I don't know. I actually think that it is a good example, though, that like sometimes what we hear about how we're perceived is also not entirely true. Like there was a lot of negative press about what the World Cup was going to be, and a lot of it was political and things that were attributed different places. But in the end, this is a great place to visit, and as many people that can have come to do so. And even your group, the Tartan Army, Stuart, because you're from
That's
Scotland,
not
right?
false.
Oh no, where are you
That
from?
that's fake media.
No,
We
but
went
I just
fake. We
think,
went fake news already, and
yeah,
it's
we went
really
fake news.
on.
I love how many people have come and just had an incredible time here. I think it's really cool.
And I got to go to a game. I got to go to the Dallas England game, England versus Croatia. And you know what was really cool is just fans from all over the place, not just Croatians and English folks were there, but folks from all over the world were enjoying that game and sitting together. And I was actually surrounded by a group of Croatians. Fortunately, the good guys won, right? But it was
Oh,
just we
Croatia
was
won? I
no,
thought England
that's
had won.
England won for sure, the good guys. And so but even afterwards, like we had really good banter. Like we got to exchange cultures a little bit. We were singing English songs, they were singing Croatian songs, and it was fun, man. It was really good. So, yeah, I'm
Will
happy
you
to
sing
admit
us
I
an
was
English
wrong.
song?
I will no, and I won't admit that Adam was right. But the World Cup's a massive opportunity. But long after the tournament, right? I think it's going to be a massive opportunity for all DMOs. All right.
I
Well, that was
think,
a long
well,
one, but I think it was an important one. I'm glad we got away from AI for one Stu's News, but we're going to jump right back into AI for the topic today. So Dan, you brought kind of a saucy topic today. It's kind of a hot topic, and you think, and I'm paraphrasing, you can restate your thesis if you want, but you feel like DMOs are approaching AI fundamentally wrong. Is that fair to say?
yeah, I mean, I'll just say, I'll own it. I feel that a lot of the destination DMOs that are out there are looking at AI as tools, and they're not actually planning and setting up the infrastructure of an AI workforce, which is going to be what's needed in the future. And that includes every department. That includes visitor facing, internal facing. And I think right now what we're seeing is having a tool, wanting to kind of set it and forget it, and then using it internally for busy work, setting up a couple tasks. And I've seen a lot of and a lot are behind on that, to be perfectly honest, of who's utilizing AI correctly, even internally, that you don't see.
So there's a massive missed opportunity, right? And so I think there is a spectrum of people, right? There's folks we spoke at some conferences earlier in the year where half the audience still hasn't got an AI policy, you know, let alone a strategy. And there are folks that are certainly early adopters. I think one of the things I've observed, and I'll let you sort of give more of where you think it should go in a sec, but then I'll talk then about where Myrtle Beach is going. But even internally, when I look at ourselves, we've got disparity, right? There's folks that are sort of super users that have really embraced the self-teaching and developing their skill sets quicker and developing agents and skills and repeatable stuff and doing really great. But then there's folks that are really just still using ChatGPT to help them sound a little smarter with email. And what we got to do as an industry and as individual organizations is try to find a way to raise the floor and the ceiling at the same time and to maybe try to close the gap between the two. But what do you probably deal with more DMOs than I do because of the services you guys are in, but where do you feel like DMOs are getting stuck right now? Why do you feel like there's this tendency to treat things like tools instead of what you're proposing, which is they become an integrated part of the workforce?
Well, I mean, it's got to be from top down and top down, bottom up approach. You have to set the framework. You have to actually know what you're trying to solve. And I think that that is a big miss, because ultimately we do talk to a lot of DMOs. And one of the first things that we do is we have a discovery call with them. And I jump on and I say, okay, hey, what are we trying to solve? And I'll tell you're right. There's some that are very advanced, but we still talk to some people that go, well, we just need AI on the website. And I'm like, okay, for what? Like, what is the outcome of the tool that you want to put on the website? What are you trying to do? And a lot still cannot answer that question. And when you look at like having a strategic plan, having a policy, those things need to be in place before you can actually move forward productively in building out an AI workforce, or even one AI tool being used at its fullest. If you don't know what you're doing with it, you don't know the outcomes that you're looking for, How are you going to know if it's successful? How are you going to know what to do with the data that you get? Like, there's so many things that go into it. It's as simple as it could be. Well, we just want to have a visitor engagement tool. Okay, for what? Like, again, I speak at a lot of conferences. There's a lot of conversations that we have with destinations, and there are some extremely competent DMOs that are out there. But when we talk to the majority, I mean, how many are there in the US? It's 1,000, 1,100, something like that, total DMOs. I mean, we're still talking about a very small percentage of them that are at least middle to above.
So I want to make sure we delineate correctly just for those that are listening. When we talk about AI for a DMO, there's two sides of it, right? One is the consumer side. And when what is our AI strategy for the consumer? And I think that's what you were referencing a moment ago. But then there's also the organizational strategy of how to leverage AI to maximize efficiency within your team and provide as much value as an organization as you can to the community, right? And I think both of those are really, really important, but we need to kind of clarify between both. So for starters, Dan, when you're having these discovery meetings, this is about consumer-facing AI, right? And so what I want to understand from you is, what should the objective be for a destination if I want to implement AI that's consumer-facing?
I would say it depends on which department's going to own it, which consumer that you're talking about, because there are multiple audiences that we serve as destinations. That can be, industry facing as well, because essentially trade, that they are a consumer because they're pushing it on the B2B to C side. All of those things need to go into what you're planning. Now, let's just start with the easiest low-hanging fruit, which is a leisure traveler looking for information about your destination, which is right now probably 90% of what people have been thinking about from a DMO side when they talk about consumers and using AI trip planning or essentially like a visitor experience tool. What's the goal? To give more information, for them to book a tour, for them to book a trip, to plan an itinerary. Those things you have to know exactly what they are, and that will change via which type of DMO that you are. Like being, I've been to Myrtle Beach a handful of times. It's a very leisure-driven destination, but you do a lot of meetings, you do a lot of different audiences as
Sports is
well.
big.
Sports is
Esports is
huge,
massive.
and that's where like those that plan should include those as separate audiences and not a, oh well, this can kind of handle that, or what are we trying to solve for that? And I think that framework or that structure isn't set up when we're looking at, or when I say we, DMOs are looking at these particular types of tools.
And I'd actually push back a little bit, Adam, on the two sides. I think there's actually three sides, well, the way we
Okay.
look at it, you know. So I think there's the internal side, like so and I could probably split that into two, but I won't for right now. But there's, you know, our team and then our stakeholders, right? Let's say there's that side. There's the audience side, which is I think is the consumer, but it's also increasingly the LLMs themselves or
Yeah.
the AI companies, right? Because the
Very fair.
strategy I have to make sure I'm appearing on ChatGPT or on Claude is different than how do I provide tools and information directly to the consumer.
Very fair.
Yeah, I would agree with that too, because the framework of the structure needs to be slightly different.
So I also want to talk a little bit about the internal side, right? So we talked a little bit about the external side. I think like there's a lack of confidence with AI internally from a lot of folks. There's a lot of dabbling, you know, and I think fundamentally there's a lack of expertise, right? Because no one's had this tool until 3 years ago, and every day it's literally getting more and more powerful. And so the latest frontier models are now even getting gate kept by the government for a small period of time because they're so powerful that they're going to expose all kind of vulnerabilities within large institutions, right? And so we're sort of getting edging closer to a singularity in terms of it's going to be so smart, it's smarter than all of us, right? And so How do we reconcile that with our current structure? And I think, given current org structures, it's impossible to expect our current staff with the current focus to adopt this en masse in a coherent way with standard operating procedures. And so I really like the approach that Emily Zatucci took at Corpus Christi before she left, which was, let's survey everyone. Let's figure out how people are using it. Let's benchmark. Then let's deploy a strategy, and then let's remeasure that to see if we're actually making progress. So Myrtle Beach has actually undertaken that. We just launched our survey a week ago. We're still trying to get the last few stragglers to fill it out, but we're going to benchmark and understand what tools are people currently using, but also where the appetite is and where the hesitancy is, where the roadblocks are. We're actually going to short-term hire a consultant to help us get this structured, but we have committed budget and resources. We're going to hire a full-time internal AI engineer source title to be determined that their sole job, and that might end up growing into a sizable team over time, but their sole job is going to be to empower the rest of the team, just like IT does with technology, right? Just like HR does with human resource, just like finance does on the financial side. We're going to have an AI team that is going to be tethered to and related to our IT team, but sort of distinct with a specific skill set. And their job is going to be making sure that every single employee is maximizing the utilization of AI. I think the org chart of the future looks very different than it does today, and we're just beginning to step into that role, into that world.
Yeah, I mean the as a company, Satisfy Labs. I mean, we're an AI company, so of course we should be a little bit higher on the advancement of internally using these tools. But we actually at one point went, okay, we've got all these different departments. We have the back of the house and front of the house as far as your biz ops. Then we have our engineering and product teams, all of which we're using different types of tools. All of which we're using them differently and in different ways. And we said, everyone stop. Every department has to come up with these like eight things. And it was, we need all your workflows. We need the tools that you're using, how you're using them. And then we went and standardized everything. I said, these are what we're going to use. They needed to be approved by upper management. So, because I think one of the big problems internally is the consistency of what's being pushed out. And even looking at like some of the most powerful tools that are out there, okay, but if one of your departments is using it like this and the other one's using it like that, that's not doing any good for the org. So we stopped everything, went full board that way for about 30 days. We work in 2 week sprints. So you had 2 weeks to identify, 2 weeks to build, then we move forward with, okay, how's every now we've standardized things, how are we using it? Then we noticed we automated too much. Cost was moving through the roof when you look at like token cost and actually like, oh, some things it can be a manual process, and that's fine. So then we went through, took another 2 week, and then 6 weeks later had a whole new way of operating across the entire company. And that was product engineering, even our overseas devs that we have, and then all the business side as well.
Dan, I actually think that's a great kind of benchmark for destinations that are listening to understand where you're at in your journey as a destination for rolling these products out internally. What happens when you have someone or a team at the top who doesn't have the proficiency in AI that they need to? They say, okay, let's all try stuff, right? And everybody's going to try different individual tools and use them. You got some people using ChatGPT, some on Perplexity, some on Claude, so on and so forth, right? And what inevitably you're going to find is that there's too much disparity in what's happening, and you need to bring back uniformity. And the problem that's happening right now is that is a nearly impossible task if the people running the initiative don't have the understanding of AI that they need to in order to do it. So, Stuart, what you're doing in bringing in a consultant and then ultimately leading to a full-time position of an AI engineer or whatever that term ends up being, I think that's critical for every organization at this point. It was funny, Dan, as you described the process you guys went through of understanding all of your SOPs and workflows. We literally 2 weeks ago went through the exact same thing as an organization because you start to recognize that you have to look at this at an organizational level and even department by department. You're not going to get the efficiency that you're after if everybody's using a different tool. And so once you understand what the SOPs and workflows are, you can evaluate what's the best tool for my organization. I'm a little bit biased. I believe that most organizations would find that Claude is going to be a really, really usable and valuable tool and easy to implement throughout the organization. But either way, if you're not to that point as an organization where you're like, okay, we need to evaluate this holistically and we need to have someone implementing a specific tool in our organization, you're probably not where you need to be at this point as an organization.
Yeah, not everyone's going to be able to hire someone, right? No one's going to be able to have the resources to do that. But at a minimum, you need to identify who that person is internally. It might be your IT team, right? It might not be, but someone has to be have this as a focus
But
because,
there's an uncomfortable truth there, Stuart.
which is
And
what.
that's the fact that if you find yourself as the leader of a DMO and you don't have that person on staff and you're not that person, you better learn it or you're going to get replaced by somebody who is that person.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think you've got to look at it through a couple of lenses. You sort of talked about the chaos of different people having different tools and inconsistency. It's also a massive liability. The risks involved with
Yes.
doing this wrong, especially as AI gets better, are just going to continue to increase. So there's a security concern, there's a privacy concern, there's an ownership of intellectual property concern. Like if everyone's bringing their own AI and doing all this stuff on their own and they leave, like you've lost a bunch of, like say someone has their own Claude account and they built all these skills and then they leave, like you're out of luck, right? So I think there's just has to be a little bit more control at an organizational level, but there's a balance between that because I also don't think you should stifle progress. And if you still haven't developed an AI policy in 3+ years, this stuff can't take another 3 years because you're going to get left behind. You're going to be irrelevant. And the great news is, if you embrace it, especially on the internal operating side, and you create agents to do planning, you create agents to do some of the mundane work, to some of the data mining, some of the predictive stuff, you can now do a lot more than you used to. Like just the efficiencies that I'm finding and able to spend my time doing other stuff are tremendous. So we can be better DMOs if we really embrace this. I'll give you a great example of that. Like we're looking at our sales team right now. We just sent out a survey to our stakeholders, sort of a 360 review, asking them how we're doing, what do you like, what's the biggest benefit from being a member of us, and where are we falling short, what would you like to see us do differently? Really vulnerable, very vulnerable, opening ourselves up to a lot of criticism. And the one message that kept coming back was, we love you guys, but we want to spend more time with you. We need more phone time or face-to-face time, right? We need to feel like we're more connected. We want to share, collaborate more. Totally fair, right? We're limited in time and energy, right? But if we can automate some of the outreach, some of the CRM, some of the housekeeping, the mundane work on our sales team, well, guess what? They just freed up couple of hours, 4 or 5 hours a week, whatever it is, that now can be spent engaged with our members, right? And what's going to be more impactful? Or if our marketing team can spend less time on the mundane, they can spend more time strategy or creative or building relationships with vendors, whatever it is. Like we can be better DMOs if we embrace this. It's not just about us as individuals being able to do more with less. It's about we can have more community impact, which is our job if we embrace this technology the right way.
Yeah, I was speaking to a smaller DMO about a week and a half ago, and we were going through a lot of these things, saying, here's how you put together a strategic plan. And the CEO said, "There's three of us here. Where do we even start doing that?" And I just asked a very simple question: if I gave you budget right now to hire one extra position, what would that be? And her answer was very, it was like a coordinator position that could kind of catch some of these internal things that you're talking about right now. And I was like, done.
Yeah,
We can
we can
help you
build an
build that
agent to do
right,
that.
yeah,
Yep.
right now. Like, and that doesn't, I'm not even selling anything that does that. That's more of a, oh, let me show you using Claude because it's easy to use. And that can do this, this, and this, and this. Okay, what's next? It doesn't have to be a full-on scary looking overarching plan. If you don't have the time or even know where to start, it could just be as simple as putting that together. Because what happens is you go, okay, well, okay, what's next? And that's exactly what I said. All right, done. We could set up these two or three things internally. Who would you hire next? Oh, well, we would, someone to help our sales team because there's only one and she kind of does everything, all sales, meetings, any like reunions. I'm like, oh, so maybe someone helping lead qualify or, adding some. It was as simple as that to get their heads moving. It took about 2 weeks and, I got a nice little draft. Hey, look at what we did. Okay, cool. You're thinking the right way now. Which is building out an AI workforce. Our first mission statement as a company was make AI hireable. And that was back in 2016. So, the idea was in the future, we would have these org charts that included virtual assistants or agents or, whatever we decide to call them as it changes every like 18 months of what they're being called. But they were part of your team. And we're finally there now. And I think we're as DMOs, I think the overall, when you look at like the majority are behind in that process.
I think it's hard, right? I think we get overwhelmed, right? Especially when we're looking at it from a 30,000 foot view and we're trying to develop a full strategy. But what you sort of illustrated is the right approach. It's sort of if you can map out where you're spending your time right now, and you can understand I'm spending 5 hours a week doing this, 4 hours a week doing this, 3 hours doing it, and then you break those down into what's the actual physical process? What's the input and the output from that chunk of time? And then you start asking the question, and you don't even need to know the answer. You can literally ask Claude this. You can say, hey, this is the process that I go through. What of this could I automate in? And it's Adam, I wouldn't mind you retelling the story about how you did that with LinkedIn, where you sort of went through the process of identifying how to optimize and asking Claude what it could do. Can you reshare that story?
Yeah, I mean, and the crazy thing is I've taken like five steps forward since then with LinkedIn. But the very first thing that I did when I was testing out the Chrome extension for Claude was I opened up my LinkedIn account. I said, okay, I want you to evaluate my LinkedIn profile and tell me what I'm leaving on the table in terms of visibility or effectiveness or anything like that. And it gave me like a 19-point review of my profile of things that need to be optimized if I want to maximize my visibility. And then I said, well, what can you do of those 19 things? And 15 of the 19 were things that Claude could do for me. So it optimized my profile file. It found little things like when we rebranded to Brand Revolt, I didn't put that in my profile correctly to where it showed up as a almost like a new job as opposed to classifying it as the same company but in a new name or whatever it was. So I asked it to optimize that for me. I asked it to optimize my work experience and all of that. And it did all of that on its own. And at the end of that, I then said, okay, go back through all the content that I've shared, and I want you to evaluate it compared to best practices and tell me where I need to optimize my content moving forward. It did that. And ever since it optimized my content and gave me those recommendations, the engagement on my content is like 5 to 6x what it was before. And so it's incredibly effective. And it's led to several meetings with potential clients as a result of the optimization that it's done on LinkedIn for me.
But you let Claude or whatever your AI of choice is be your coach and your assistant on it, right? You just ask it the questions that you don't know the answer to, and it can help answer them. And then I think that's the thing we got to get people used to is sort of leaning on it as a confidant, as an
Treat it like a
advisor.
coworker.
As instead of a tool, treat it like
Yes.
a personified person or an assistant.
I brain dump every day into mine. Now I have like automation set up, so like every one of my meetings is transcribed. It goes into I use Claude and Gemini. It goes into multiple areas. It produces the stuff that I need. But I still think that, like, from how I feel about particular meetings is, like, I have stuff running around in my head that wasn't said in the meeting that I need to get out. And I work from home. I have a dog. Usually at the end of the day, I come down from the office and I just take the dog for a little bit of a walk. I put voice mode on and I just debrief into it. I store them as projects, listed as days. I take that, it gives me a to-do list the next day, or like ideas based on that. And I don't have it arrive until the next morning. Because once I brained up, I don't want to think about it anymore. I
You've
want
been
it
the admin.
fresh. I want to get it out. I just want to get it out. And it could be as simple as, you know, I had a conversation with Adam a few months ago and I had ideas running through my head, but I also had like seven meetings that day that were kind of jumbling together. And I took that brain dump, mixed it with the actual meeting notes of things, organized it all for me. And it's just a real helpful tool when it comes to things like that. And I was like, hey, is there anything that I missed that I probably should have been thinking about, you know, as it takes the three or four lists the next morning and like comes back together. That's a really cool thing to have access to that we never did before.
Can I give you a yes and on that, Dan, on what you've done there?
Of course.
So I've set up a weekly reminder, or not reminder, but re weekly repeatable skill in Claude where it will scan all of my emails, all my meeting notes from the previous week, and all my Slack messages. And I created a live artifact in Claude where it's my priority list based on all of the different communication tools that I'm using. So I would love to do what you did with like the voice activation at the end of each day, but I would forget stuff. I know I would forget stuff. And so this actually goes into all the different sources of tasks for me and compiles it into a priority list and has been incredibly helpful to me.
But I think,
No,
Adam, what he's
totally.
saying is it's an augmentation, right? So you pull all that stuff in, but then anything that's in your head that you just want to get out and put it into the ether, you can do. I love voice mode. I use it all the time for brainstorming, for just trying to think through stuff. Like I treat it like a coworker that obviously it's getting smarter and smarter about me in the context every day. And it's really good at now knowing cross conversation context as well. And so I find it very cathartic just to have a deep conversation with it about work related and non-work related stuff. It's really good at teaching you things. Hey, help me understand this concept from first principles. And you can sort of coach it to what level it needs to get to. Don't move on until you feel like I understand it fully, that kind of thing. It's a really good tool. I love the voice
Yeah,
mode.
the voice thing for me is just there's things that I don't put down in writing because they're just running around in my head, strategies or ideas based on conversations. And it could be something that I use for that meeting, but that meeting could kick off something that I use for 10 other things or even a different vertical. We, you know, as a company, Satisfy Labs works in sports, entertainment, attractions, as well as destinations. And sometimes a really solid meeting with a different type of tourism client will kick off a really good DMO idea. But I would never say that within the meeting or write it down because I was just thinking it and or like brain dumping into it and went, oh, you know what? That's not good for them. That would be great for a meetings agent for destinations. And that's where like I take that with everything else that I have written down to kind of fully have every piece because some stuff I just don't put down anywhere. You know how it goes? You're out, you're meeting, you're like, I'm not gonna write that down. Or even say it out loud because I'm just thinking in my head it wouldn't be relevant to you guys at this point. But it kicks off ideas for other things.
So let's sort of, we're getting close on time on this episode. So let's sort of get tactical for DMOs. Like what advice would you give folks? Like there's a lot of DMOs out there that are struggling, and you know, shameless plugs in this, but you know, what advice would you give to a DMO that's struggling? Like what they want to take AI to the next level, but they don't quite know how to do it. Like what's the best tangible next step for those folks?
If you don't have a strategic plan, And when I say strategic plan, I mean from a department by department written down on paper, you need to start it. Right, like even task it with those particular departments of just like we talked about earlier, writing down the workflows and the if, or even asking the question, if we gave you an extra employee, what would you do with it? Like where do
I
you
think
need the
that's great.
help? And then start by putting that stuff down on paper. By going department by department, whether you realize it or not, you're gonna actually start working up a pretty solid strategic plan of what you need, the outcomes that you're trying to achieve, the goals. All of those things matter because whether it's something that you're building internally or something that you're going to use for a consumer that you might be purchasing, you have to know what you're trying to solve. And if you don't, you wouldn't hire an employee and not give them a job description, KPIs, OKRs, whatever acronym that you're using for measurement. The agents, whether they're internal, built yourself, or you're hiring them and buying them, should all have those things. And you can't do that unless you have a like a, an org plan.
Adam, what advice would you give folks?
I would say start thinking about AI the way you think about G Suite or Microsoft suite of tools. You know, we right now, if we're using Gmail, everyone's on Gmail, everyone's on Google Sheets, everyone's on Google Docs. And I think your AI tool is at the point now where it needs to be the same. You need to standardize your tools that you're using and have everyone using the same suite of tools with the same core context that it's pulling from. Still allow people to be creative and try new things, but we're reaching the point now where standardization is going to save a lot of organizations a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of labor.
And it might not be one tool, right? It might be
No.
one tool for specific feet functions, right? Just
Yeah.
like you have different tools. You have one for
Standardized
email,
by
you have one
function.
for
Yeah.
So now I agree with that. I like the approach of starting with like understanding where you are right now and where your team is right now, like doing a survey to which is what we're doing with, which is identifying what tools people are using, how they're using it, you know, what benefits they're getting from it, whether they have their own private account or a company paid account, whether it's an actual business account versus a individual account paid for by the company, like really understanding someone needs to own it, whether it's IT, whether it's finance, HR, doesn't matter. Pick someone to own this and say, hey, we need to do an audit of what everyone's using, where their comfort is. And then importantly, benchmark it. You really want to understand from an individual employee perspective on a scale of 1 to 5, how comfortable are they using AI? How effective are they at using AI? It can be a very subjective scale, right? Because each individual is going to sort of score themselves differently. But then you have an aggregate starting point of knowing where you are, understanding what people need from a training perspective, because everyone wants to learn a little differently. Some like hands-on, some like self-paced video, someone to come in and talk at the group, someone to sit down with an expert, right? Understand the learning styles of your team and develop an education and implementation strategy. I think that's important so you can normalize it. But I think to Dan's point, making sure you have goals in mind. Like for us, some of the goals are finding efficiencies and we can measure that, right? How much repetitive work is now automated and measure that in hours, right? We can measure that over time. What is the comfort level in the effectiveness level individually reported on aggregate of our team? We can measure that over time, right? And so can we standardize the software across the board? Can we standardize operating procedures? I love that. One of the questions we hadn't asked Dan, but we are going to ask, I think now this is great. If you go department by department and map out your standard procedures in understand how people are doing their job, and then you can start to identify, oh, this is taking 10 hours, let's target this to automate. Asking people what could they do, what would they do if they added resources, I think is a great question everyone should be asking. I think that's really, really smart. We're going to steal that from you for sure.
Well,
Because,
I would assign an ownership to each one of these things too. Someone has to own it. And that's like the one of the big mistakes that we see or that I see in the conversations that we have is there's no particular owner in the organization that's like, I'm responsible for this. You have a POC, but they actually don't own it. And that's where I think that the you can build these things. You don't have employees that don't have someone that manages them, who they report to. And that's another thing that you have to add to this. Because if not, you just get AI for AI's sakes. And when you if you're on the vendor side, as you come up for renewal, those things are really hard to then go, well, what's the ROI for us? Well, I don't know. We can't tell you. So those are those things where if you assign an owner, you have a plan, it just makes this stuff a lot easier to adopt and
I would agree.
report success to your board, which is important for everyone.
Yeah, for sure. Couldn't agree more. Dan, this is a great conversation. I
Yeah.
appreciate you bringing it to us. If you people want to find out more about you guys and what you're up to, where can they do that?
Yeah, satisfylabs.com. We've got a website. I'm available on LinkedIn too, Dan Flores from Satisfy Labs. I've done the same thing Adam's done, so you should be able to find me pretty
Oh
easily.
man, I was about to give Adam a hard time and ask if you were actually writing your own content on LinkedIn
I
or letting
built a
AI do.
skill that does it that I took 3 or 4 years of my own LinkedIn post. So there hasn't been much change,
What a
but
brilliant idea. What a brilliant idea.
if you do say so yourself.
Yeah,
Just don't be the guy that's commenting in everyone's post with some really over the top, exaggerated, sycophantic nonsense, you know, because that's driving me crazy on LinkedIn right now. Don't do that.
I hear you on that.
You use it wisely. It's a powerful tool. Adam, if they want to reach you, where can they do it?
So Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or of course on Tourism IQ. And I've got a quick content request for Dan for next time. You said start with the objective on the consumer side. Dan, I would love to have you create a map of if this is your objective, here's the type of toolkit you should install. And if you do that by objective, it's a great educational tool for destinations to understand what they should do by their objective. It'd be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll give myself a little shout out here. I have one
Oh,
because
sweet.
we've treed out basically on the consumer side of everything for destinations and been mapping agents to them with objectives and key results all
That
built
should be our
into the
next
agents.
episode, right there. That's our next episode.
I didn't tell them that either, so that wasn't like a
I felt like
can
you
you
guys
team
are in
me up for
cahoots. Is Adam getting commission on this? Like, what's going on here?
I will now.
That's
Yeah,
hilarious.
maybe now. Maybe
Well, I
now.
was about to say Adam's giving you homework, Dan. You didn't sign up for that, but I guess maybe it worked out okay. But yeah, Dan, we'd love to have you back and to drill down into that. I think some of the desties are definitely saying, "Hey, we love the cerebral high level conversation, but we really want to get some tactical advice from this show as well." So that'll be a great future episode. So look forward to that, desties. If you want to find me, you can do so on LinkedIn or stuart.butler@visitmodelbeach.com. And as I said earlier, Visit Model Beach is about to hire a AI guru internally for our team. So if you're interested in that kind of a role, feel free to reach out to me. We haven't posted it yet when we're recording, but I'm hoping we'll be posting that within the next couple of weeks. And so if you're an AI genius and you want to come work for the best DMO in the world at Visit Model Beach, then reach out, stuart.butler@visitmodelbeach.com. Adam, I can't believe I did all that and you didn't call me out for being self-promoting like I always do you.
You're always hawking your wares. Did I say that right?
That's exactly what I tell you all the time.
Yeah,
Desties, please leave a review and like the show wherever you listen to it. Adam will read them out as promised. And until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
thanks, everybody. Right, hey,
Great.
thanks, guys. That was awesome. I gotta run.
No,
Yeah,
you
see you,
gotta say
Adam.
something stupid first, Dan. Not Dan, Adam.
I would say, I'll say something stupid.
You did it for me.
Yeah.